Alright, what's up, class? This is Optimus Fields at My Living Truth, and we're back for another episode of Teacher's Lounge. We're at block height 679,266, and the current price of Bitcoin is 62,757. Jestifer, you're taking co-host duties tonight. What a week. Low-key bullish, right? Like, I mean, besides the price movement, but low-key really bullish.
Dude, incredibly bullish. I think we got a good list of questions going to stimulate some discussion. But also, I mean, what a week. I mean, Coinbase IPO, Copa suing CSW. It's, yeah, we got lots to talk about.
We got GOP House Leader endorsing Bitcoin. What did you put this morning? Gary Gensler is the new SEC chief. Man,
yeah, the guy that taught the class at MIT for like Bitcoin and blockchain, like that's now he's leading the SEC. So I mean, pretty exciting if you're paying attention to, I guess, U.S. politics or U.S. policy, since you know they got the hegemon spot.
I mean, guys, it really. Like, all right, so we got CoinEggers in here. I was watching Simply Bitcoin, and you guys were so on point. Like, it really does feel like Bitcoin is taking over the mind share of everyone, or at least everyone that knows. And it's just crazy to see it all play out so quickly. It's, you know, suddenly or gradually, then suddenly, and it's like the dominoes are falling. There's so much bullish news out there, but. You know, it, like Twitter's still just like everyone attacking each other, and the price went up, and we're happy for that one moment. And, you know, like, who really cares? You know, there's always new news in Bitcoin, and you forget about the last news very quickly. You know, Bitcoin never sleeps. So crazy stuff. All right, guys. I think we'll start with this one. This question, Tufik brought it up during our game planning earlier, and I'd like to get everyone's opinion on this one. So chime in, guys, definitely. So the question is, as a Bitcoiner, what is our collective responsibility for the ecosystem? So this one might get a little hairy because, you know, everyone says there's no Bitcoin community, and there's just a lot of factions in Bitcoin. So do you guys personally feel a responsibility for the Bitcoin ecosystem, or are we out here, you know, just individuals doing what's best for ourselves? And if it's good for me, then it'll be good for Bitcoin.
I agree with that.
Chime in, elaborate a little bit.
I think everybody should act in their own rational self-interest. And because of Bitcoin's game theory incentives that are a positive feedback loop between all the different actors, it will maintain itself because it's built to work in an environment where each actor is looking out for themselves. And in doing so, they will look out for the protocol and the system. It's happening. It's been happening. It's even getting better. It's getting stronger, harder. More people care. More people look. Us, we volunteer every Wednesday night to talk about it, just so other people can learn. You know, we don't have to do this, but it's in our own rational self-interest to do it.
But in just playing devil's advocate on that, Jim, is this not our attempt at responsibility for the ecosystem, even though we are self-interested?
Oh, exactly. No, that's what I was agreeing with. In our actions as self-interested individuals, acting in our own rational self-interest. Again, that's not my term, but I think it is concise. By doing that, our actions, the actions that are needed to support the ecosystem lie in the fact that when humans, all the different actors of this system do that, they act in their own self-interest, it ends up being the right incentives to keep the system working. So it's built to thrive on that. The open source nature, the consensus nature, nobody gets to run the show. It's like it's unique. It's I don't know, there's something about it. It's sort of natural. It's got the tendencies of having qualities that are outside of humans already, like sort of like of nature. So the scarcity, like, can we really change it? Of course. Will it happen? No, because you need consensus is way too many people. So there's a natural resistance to the code changing in certain ways that make it sort of unique, like a natural element that you can only find so much of, like gold. You know we can keep finding more, but imagine if there was something that there was an end to it, and we all knew it somehow. I don't know how you could, but in Bitcoin we do have that. So all of a sudden it's one more unique step towards this uncontrollable natural thing, and it works. It has these characteristics because of the self-fulfilling positive feedback loop and the actions of each individual. I find it fascinating. I hope I'm not sounding a little too out there and esoteric and nutty, but
No, I
you said it, your
fu
statement, I agreed with. And you said, you know, if we act for ourselves, does that do it? And I said, yeah, I definitely think it does. I think that's what's made it work.
I would 100% agree with you. It's just, it seems so radical for the person outside of Bitcoin because we're so inundated with the ideology of do what's best for society at large and the we're all in this together type thinking. And so I think we're not used to it as just the average person where we've taught to be unselfish. And so being selfish is like voodoo, you know? It's taboo to relish in your own personal selfishness versus, you know, like you got to be a good person, you got to cooperate with society and all that good stuff that we've grown up to believe. But as a Bitcoiner, it's like our cooperation is our self-interest and our selfishness is a virtue when it comes to Bitcoin. It has a way of taming your self-interest where you got to do what's best for yourself, and by doing what's best for yourself, it's best for the protocol. And when you were talking, it reminded me of that Ayn Rand quote where it's like, I swear by my life and those that I love that I shall never live for another man or ask another man to live for me. And
Yeah.
I think I butchered that quote, but that's like the gist of it. But
Well, if you think about it, all of life it works properly when everybody considers their own rational self-interest first. Because if everybody needs sustenance, needs to be taken care of, needs food, clothing, and shelter, every single individual needs that. We can work together or we can work individually. But since we already, every single minute of every day, are making decisions to remove current and future uneasiness in our own lives, that in and of itself is looking out for you. And it's absolutely essential and natural. You know, when your body needs something like food, you take care of it. You don't just ignore it because you have to keep going. You need to pay the bills. You get up and get yourself to work so you can get your paycheck. We do things that are in our own rational self-interest constantly every single day, millions of times in our lives. You know, it's just how you have to live. And think about it. If everybody carries their own weight, then theoretically nobody has to suffer. Now we know, of course, that some people are dependent in various ways and not by any fault of their own necessarily. But the point is, though, that if everybody just simply had the rational concept that you absolutely have to, not only do you have to, you already do it, but if you just embrace it and you don't look at it as a selfish act, you look at it like, by me taking care of myself, I am taking care of my neighbor. Like the phrase, you take care of you for me, and I'll take care of me for you. Right? So by you taking care of you for yourself, you're also taking care of yourself for me, so I don't have to take care of you. And then I can live my life without having the extra burden of taking care of you, right? So, like, what's wrong with that? That's the natural state right there. So, you know, it's society's warped and been convinced into collectivism, like you need to live for your neighbor, which is fine after you've taken care of yourself, but not first. That's absurd. You know, you're going to starve so your neighbor can live, and then we'll go to you after that, after you're dead and gone, because you just sacrificed for your neighbor. Gave them all your food because they were hungrier than you. I mean, like, where do you draw that line? It's absurd.
I'm done. It's the airplane oxygen mask idea. You know, put the mask on yourself.
Yeah, it is. Exactly.
What else are you guys thinking? Are me and Jim the crazy ones, or are we right?
So one thing I would like to add, maybe a couple of things. One is, like, they say, love yourself, like, as you love your neighbor, or love your neighbor as you love yourself, right? So it's like, if you don't love yourself, you cannot love your neighbor. But at the same time, I see that, like, charity work, in a way that people were setting up faucets, yeah? I don't know, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I guess some faucets gave you more than one BTC at the time, right? So I'm thinking just early adoption, yeah? Like, how many people got on board just because of some crazy, wild people giving away Bitcoin? Like, it's self-destructive act that will maybe, you know, end up in you not being able to buy another continent, maybe, later down the line, or maybe, you know, a few islands. So you lose insane wealth, but at the same time, you onboard some random people on the internet. And that's, I think, when it gets tricky. It's like you go against your own interest in order to, I don't know, spread some BTC around and let people try and see for themselves what it is and how it works.
It's not necessarily against the self-interest of the people who did that, because at the time they were giving away something that had no intrinsic value for the most part. And it was only because other people got it that it was able to grow in its value, and so that what they did keep would have been their reward for spreading the stuff that they had to give up. I mean, you can't keep it all and expect worldwide adoption. If you're holding all of it, that ain't going to work. So it's a natural progression, what it went through. I mean, they're still giving BTC away. Every day I spend money through my fold card, I get free Bitcoin. It boggles my mind. I've got like $400 worth of Bitcoin since like December. And it's maybe not a lot of money, but to me, $400 free but in the form of actual Bitcoin is gold. It's like going to be worth 10 times that in a few years. And I did it just by spending the money I was going to spend anyway. So to me, there's still free BTC flowing out there. You just have to get it in a different way. So, but it's in their best interest to do that, because I use their card. They're making profit somehow. I don't know how to do it. I don't really care. As far as I'm concerned, I'm winning.
Are you talking about the fold card? Are you talking about the fold card?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm amazed. I go to Lowe's, I get a gift card on the app. So on my phone, instead of using the card, I have a card, right? So for places that don't have a gift card in the app store on the app, you can use the card anywhere. Like, I go to the gas pump, I get gas now, and then I get free sats from buying gas. But like at Lowe's, it's a guaranteed 4%. So I buy the gift card. Then I buy the products with the gift card. So I get the reward for buying the gift card, not when I spend it. But every time I buy the gift card, I get the rewards, the sat rewards. Plus, you get to spin the wheel. For any of you guys that may not know, they have this like roulette wheel that allows you to get multiplied the amount of sats you just got by up to 75 times, which is amazing. But you can win potentially a free Bitcoin, and some people have. But there's all kinds of other levels of different prizes. And then they keep sending me free spins. So if I get like a really low level prize, and I know my odds are that, because, you know, like if you get the lowest prize on the wheel, well, the odds are you spin again, you're not going to get it again. So you're only more likely to increase your reward. So if you got extra spins, you do that. So it's like a whole fun thing, man. Seeing if you could up your sats reward. It's like I'm kind of hooked. And everybody that uses it says the same thing. So anyway, you should all go get it. Get online, get the app on your phone, and then get signed up for the actual card. And you could use it everywhere. I use it in the supermarket when I'm buying groceries, anywhere. I just always, and then every time I get free Bitcoin, and then I spin the wheel and I maybe multiply that. So it's awesome.
What do you say?
We got to tell them I just shilled all that so they can use this as an advertisement.
And then you bring that up. We're looking to do that with one of our partners on legal services where you get. When you buy legal services, you're going to get free Bitcoin back.
Oh, man.
Rebate?
I think we might be the first law firm to do it. I don't know. I haven't seen another one out there. But.
Well, you're going to have to show that on Twitter.
Charge less.
Oop. In Bitcoin. give a discount if they pay in Bitcoin.
Oh, we don't give a discount if they pay in Bitcoin, but Well, we do definitely love to accept Bitcoin because it's just way fucking easier, especially if you're doing international stuff. But yeah, I was really nice to hear everyone's thoughts on that one. It's definitely something that I hold dear to my heart. And Tony brought up some good points there, and so did My Living Truth. But yeah, I definitely think that there is a caring for oneself. Through that, caring for one's community that kind of extends out from that. And it is up to us to care for the community because it is in our interest, right? Like, why are we here? Like, why are we on this platform right now talking? We talking because it's making us more money? Not necessarily. So what is it actually doing? It's not a direct kind of method to increase our self-interest. It is an indirect one where we're trying to grow a community and we're trying to push an ideology. And I think that by doing so, we're kind of also self-interested because it's assisting in our ability to fulfill our role in life, so to speak. And if you do believe that blockchain is going to solve and Bitcoin is going to solve and make the lives of many people better, and you make that your life's work, you know, that is not only benefiting yourself, but only from a monetary standpoint, but it's benefiting yourself from a personal fulfillment standpoint and a completion of your life's task standpoint, which I think is much more higher self-fulfillment than you know, collecting a bunch of coin. I use this story that's near and dear to my heart all the time, which is where I'm originally from, which is Lebanon, and where the banking system is totally crapped out and folks can't even pay and exchange out money to pay for goods or go to university. And this is not even loans, is that they just can't even, you know, there's a family friend who had to go to school in Stanford, saved 7 years to go to Stanford. And when he went to pay for his university, the bank told him no. And you're not taking your money out of the bank. It really breaks my heart. Because I could think about myself in that situation if I was back home and I wanted to come and study and I saved and then the bank told me no. You know, how would I react? How would my life be shifted? How my own kind of trajectory in life would be, you know, altered for the worse? And I think about that and yeah, maybe it is self-interested because I see myself in him or see myself in all those guys who got denied because they didn't have access to capital back home. And I think about all the guys who around the world don't have access to a banking system that is faithful. You know, it's not that faithful in our North American society, let alone in developing nations. And is that self-interest? No, I think I think it is in a certain sense, because I, you know, I find it, I'm self-interested in completing my life's work, not necessarily, you know, collecting coin, but it is also for caring for others in a certain sense.
I think you're right. Yeah, we do have a collective responsibility, like to Bitcoin. And I think Ben the Cardman has said it on this podcast before, you know, that the greatest threat to Bitcoin is apathy. And so, like, I think our collective responsibility is to, like, pass on those principles that do act in our self-interest and also benefit the world as a whole. I mean, the idea of decentralization and the idea of, like, auditability, verifiability, like the Bitcoin is just running a truth machine. Like we're synchronizing the entire globe on, like, one monetary standard and saying that, you know, you've put in the work and you will be aptly rewarded for the work that you've done in the form of a token. And the open source nature of it kind of allows anyone to innovate, and it sets up a situation where the good ideas just rise to the top. And, like, and that's a positive feedback loop, because, you know, every time that Bitcoin gets a good idea that rises to the top, the entire system benefits. BTC Viking dropped something in the chat also, which I thought was just beautiful. And he wrote, "I think Buddhism and Bitcoin are aligned. Selfishness might be the wrong word, but Buddhism is to find yourself and your place in the universe. You have to know yourself in order to shine the brightest. Be your best self, not for yourself, but for everyone else. Steve Jobs loved it for the reason that it did serve the individual in order to serve a community." And I think, you know, these two ideas that, like, I'm working in my self-interest and also benefiting the community really works together well, because we do have aligned incentives now. Whereas, you know, in every other system, you know, we've got politicians acting in their self-interest, which comes at the cost of, you know, all their constituents. So, really well said by Viking. So thanks for dropping that in the chat. Really good thoughts.
Well, it's a dichotomy, right? Because as a Bitcoiner, we have looked out into society at large and we're like, okay, this shit's broken. There's something wrong here. And then you figure out that Bitcoin is the solution, that Bitcoin can help your life succeed. And once, like, your cup overflows, it almost feels like an obligation to tell other people that, like, look, you can break yourself free from those shackles, from those chains as well. You know, the system is pinned against you. It's working against you, whether you know it or not. And, like, here's the exit door, and it's Bitcoin. And, you know, I'll help you learn Bitcoin as much as possible, because the more people that learn Bitcoin, that use Bitcoin, that are able to escape from the exit door and push back on the system that is taking so much from us, that, you know, your personal self-interest at large, like a larger scale, is able to affect change on society for the better. Because I don't really see Bitcoiners being, like, greedy, selfish scammers that are just looking to push their bags and acquire as much Bitcoin at the expense of others. They're very much, at least most of the people that I know, are very much on the plane of provide as much value as possible to the world, and then I acquire the Bitcoins. And by spreading the sound money gospel, it makes everyone's life better and not just my own. And so it is a dichotomy. And but I have a kind of tangent question, like maybe we can come back to this discussion. But Tufik, you said you're from Lebanon, and What are your thoughts on Talib right now? Because he just popped back up on Twitter recently, and someone was saying like Nassim has done a disservice to the Lebanese people because it's he's the expert and he's telling people not to buy Bitcoin.
Yeah, like I can't comment on his story there because I'm not really following it too closely. I know that he popped back up, but didn't seem he came out against Bitcoin. He said. Didn't he come out kind of for Bitcoin, I saw, or was it?
I mean, he was supposedly a Bitcoiner for a while. He wrote the forward for the Bitcoin Standard. He said he was into Bitcoin, and then I forget when it was, but a couple months back, he said that he sold out of his Bitcoin because it's too volatile, and that if it's going to be money, it should be less volatile. And then he came back like today, or maybe it was yesterday. I forget exactly what it was, but he came back basically saying, again, restating that Bitcoiners are brainless amoebas, and that the price movement since he sold is still technical noise because it's gone up 30% or something on those lines since he supposedly sold out.
Right. Yeah. Like to be frank, like I think Bitcoin from the earliest days to what it is now, it has definitely shifted. There has definitely been a shift in what it was, its OG role, I think, into what it is now, right? I think what it is now is way more of a bigger solution than what was it potentially intended for at the beginning, right? Intended before, you know, if you read the white paper, you know, it's essentially a payment system that solves the double spend problem, right? Which it still does all of these things, but I think Bitcoin has become much, much more than that. And I think Bitcoin is now an ability for people to decouple themselves from the shackles of a fiat-based economic system and put themselves in the rails of a system in which does not devalue your wealth as an embedded mechanism in that system, as a system that actually allows you to accrue your wealth over time. So I could see why like OG guys are maybe aided by that, because at the moment I would agree that Bitcoin does not behave as a currency. It's not something that I carry around paying people in Bitcoin. You know, I paid a couple of people in Bitcoin here and there, but it's not something that I do, or it's something that a lot of people do. I think Bitcoin really, really does, and why it's beautiful is exactly what I just said about that. And you know, just to delve in a bit on this, it's that, you know, we're living in a situation where wages are stagnant. We have inflation that's about to kick off because of quantitative easing. We're going to have a potential, and we already are seeing this, and we're having a situation where your average wage is not able to buy things in which people want to buy year over year, right? Because if you're in an area like where I live, housing prices are going up by 24%. And you have your salary that's going up, let's say, by 5%. And you have, let's say, just on a linear basis, you see this type of increase happening. And one of the things that you want to buy is a house, right? Just for example's sake, you know, you're essentially playing a losing game. right? Losing game that can only be won through further indebtment and entrenchment into the system, which then also puts you in a potential disadvantage down the line. If you could tell me that I can red pill myself and get out of that system and find a way in which I can save money, no real need to have an intense kind, no need to understand value investing or technical analysis or what have you, but just be able to really buy and hold accruing assets, we have essentially unlocked the ability for millions of people, especially in our communities, to be able to save and protect their wealth over time. And it's for me, it's a much more of a wealth protection method than an actual payment method. But it is still a payment method, and I think we're going to see down the line that Bitcoin is going to become almost a intrabank or for major sums of money type of payment method, and we're going to see it develop out in that method, which was a part of its initial goal. But you know, I think he thought that it was going to be this digital currency in which I could go buy groceries with. It's just not. And it might have, there was a moment where we might have thought it was gonna be.
And also, I think like he needs to zoom out a little bit more, because I'm guessing he thinks that at 60K we're at hyper Bitcoinization maybe. And while most of us are like, no, Bitcoin still has a lot of room to grow before it needs to become a stable store of value or unit of account, medium of exchange. And, you know, like, I know most of us here would be like, Bitcoin's in the process of being monetized. Therefore, you'd expect it to be volatile. And until most of the world is using it, then we can talk about it. If it's still volatile then, and it's got flaws and everything that he's saying now. But I guess we digressed a little bit, but thank you for that. Cause,
well, that's a good point too. We just don't know how Bitcoin will behave. Like even right now it's behaving slightly differently than before, where we had, you know, highs, which were, you know, very quickly followed by a huge drops, where now we've had, you know, essentially several, Bitcoin has hit several all-time highs, dropped and then continued to hit those highs, closer to kind of plan B stock to flow than maybe what we previously had thought. At least now it's much more validated than maybe previously. So yeah, it remains to be seen. There could be a moment once we get to that you know, that very high threshold of mined Bitcoin, that the price does stable out a bit, and then it can then be used as a means of payment. For me, you know, I think really the value is that we're making investment sexy for a lot of young people who have a potential extremely challenging economy ahead of them. I think that's a huge value.
Yeah, as a younger person, I'd agree with that. Andrew, I see you unmuted yourself.
Yeah, I mean, as far as like the plan changing for Bitcoin, I totally hear your point, but I kind of want to state, like, he did put, you know, on the Genesis block, you know, Chancellor on the brink of bailout or second bailout. And there is 21 million for a reason. So I don't think, you know, Bitcoin's vision has failed. And I also think Nassim's criticism toward Bitcoin is probably one of the most ridiculous ones, because this is just my opinion. Obviously, it's not going to be. You can't just build something like this and then say, okay, it's been about a decade. Prices should be completely stable. Like, this is a huge, huge thing that we are replacing. Like, bonds. People are trying to store their value in stocks and gold and real estate and all fiat currencies on the planet. So I think similar to TCP/IP, I think things will be built on top of Bitcoin. And also similar to TCP/IP, there was no like concrete central authority for it, which I think is another factor that led to its success, which has a very key similarity with Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. And I like what Viking put in the chat. He goes, how got vision for Bitcoin that we are yet trying to understand and unravel? Man, shouts out to Hal. He was on it, man. Anyone else want to chime in before I segue a little bit? We've been chatting on this one for a minute.
Aleb's take was so disappointing. I mean, this is the guy that studied volatility. Like, he understands that, you know, number goes up and down. And then, you know, here we got Bitcoin with it, which is an excellent store of value. Like, it taps into like one of the key properties of money, just that store of value, which means number go up for us because all the money that we've become accustomed to just does not have that property. It's like so focused on being a medium of exchange or a unit of account that it has like completely forgotten about the store of value properties. So like, I don't know, like how did his brain fail him like so much? Like, I mean, he's in this now public, you know, pissing contest with Saifedean, and it was pretty clear that he just missed the concepts that were in the Bitcoin standard, even though he wrote the foreword for it. And now Saifedean is ditching him and choosing Michael Saylor to write the foreword because he actually understands this technology. So I'm glad to see Saifedean moving on, you know, to actually like put some good content in front of his awesome book that helps people understand Bitcoin and understand money in general and understand what it means for the world. Yeah. Which massively impactful.
Well, Jesper, did you see Saifedean's thread today? He's like, Nassim didn't even read my book. He just like put it in a forward.
It was beautiful.
So sad.
I wrote in the chat, you know, he's like, he's in this public pissing contest, but his arguments just don't hold water. Whatever.
He's going, he went off on him. That's hilarious.
Yeah, they went pretty ham today. Man.
It's funny. The Lebanese don't hold anything back. That's great. I'm happy that Saif kind of put him in his place there because, like, I've seen Saif speak in person, and like that is, you know, his thought is bang on. It's been bang on since he wrote the book. So it's. I hope it continues.
Yeah, agreed. Bitcoin Standard is one of those books that finally like made it all click. You know, there's hours of podcasts, and then you get to through the Bitcoin Standard, and then you go back to the podcast, and you're like, oh wow, okay, now I see the big picture, and this is starting to make sense to me. All right, guys, I'm gonna segue a little bit into some of this other stuff we got in here. I think the thing we'll start on is the Coinbase IPO. If you've been a listener to the show, you know we're not the biggest fans of Coinbase. But the question here is the Coinbase IPO bullish or bearish for Bitcoin? And I mean, I don't know. I'll start it off. I personally don't really see them too connected. I mean, it's definitely good for Bitcoin in the sense that it's giving Bitcoin some sense of legitimacy to the non Bitcoiner, because I've been getting a lot of text about Coinbase this past week and got a few calls yesterday about it and stuff. So it's definitely making the rounds and it's perking people's ears up. But I mean, like Brian Armstrong hasn't been too big of a fan of Bitcoin. He can hardly say the word Bitcoin. So I don't know. It might do more damage than good, you know? Like, I don't know. It seemed to pump and dump today, but it's I don't know. It feels a little overvalued in my opinion. I think it was like $100 billion valuation, and personally I don't think I can say with full faith that Coinbase is 10% of the total Bitcoin market cap, but that's just me. Maybe I'm missing a few things, but what do you guys think? Is this bullish or bearish for Bitcoin?
Yo. Fuck Coinbase, but also it is bullish, and I'll tell you why. Because other than the fact that they suck and all that, and they promote shit coins, and their CEO is a piece of shit that doesn't basically ever mention Bitcoin.
Go off, King.
The good thing about it is that we have a Bitcoin-esque company now being traded, an exchange, you know, so it brings more like security in terms of regulation. So like if they actually wanted to ban Bitcoin and things like that, the US government, then you're also now like harming the market even more. And it's also just like clearing ways for more exchanges to IPO and things like that. So it's good from a bullish from a regulatory standpoint.
Yeah, and I think just on the on-ramping, right, like having something on the NASDAQ creates kind of that institutional kind of reputational legitimacy that will allow folks to essentially download it, and the first thing they're going to buy on Bitcoin, more like on Coinbase, more likely than not, is going to be Bitcoin, right? It's another avenue for people to have access to Bitcoin, and I can't see why that can't be a bad thing.
Yeah, I think it definitely gives some more exposure to the Bitcoin space.
Don't buy it because stonks are stupid and Bitcoin is better than all of them. So it's irrelevant, like what the price is.
Well, I mean, that kind of brings up the next point I was going to bring up, because we have over here, MicroStrategy. Is MicroStrategy a Bitcoin ETF? And I, like Weineck has said, I got a few friends that were basically telling me, oh, you know, buy Coinbase and you're getting exposure to Bitcoin. And I was like, in some sense, yeah, I guess maybe, but like, just buy Bitcoin, like just buy, you know, spot Bitcoin, like you're better off that way.
It's like, but do you want exposure to Bitcoin or do you want actual Bitcoin?
Want a whole Bitcoin? Like,
it's like, you want to jack off tonight or bang this hot girl? Like, if you jack off, you...
Ooh, that's harsh.
Oh, Wadik is going.
You're not getting exposure to Bitcoin. In theory, you're getting exposure to Coinbase's profits, and they barely even hold any Bitcoin, which is kind of a joke. It doesn't mean they're going to be profitable, but they are, because they just are involved with trades. They don't give a crap.
This thing also MicroStrategy.
What about them?
Like MicroStrategy, he was talking about the ETF, at like pseudo ETF, like Bitcoin, that if you buy MicroStrategy, you're like getting Bitcoin exposure because of their large stash.
You really are. Exactly. Coinbase doesn't even have a fraction of that.
Yeah, Coinbase is a bunch of scammers.
they have custody of other people's Bitcoin and they make money off of trades. But that's just it. That's where their value is, in the money they make. And maybe they're super profitable, that they're worth $100 million or whatever they valued it. I don't really see it. And I think it's, considering they're one of the first and biggest in the space to hold only like 4,500 Bitcoin, is pretty lame, kind of. So I don't know.
It just shows where they stand.
Yeah. Like Optimus said, Brian Armstrong could barely say the word Bitcoin. He's like the Winklevoss. They talk crypto. It's like, what the hell, man? It's weird. I don't understand how they make all their money because Bitcoin exists, and yet they almost want to deny it so they can not appear scammy. And what else could it be? Because they make money off of shit coins that are vaporware, that are, people are going to get wrecked eventually. It's only a matter of time.
It's like they're cementing themselves in this like short-term value proposition. You know, like here we're in the price discovery phase for this new technology that has emerged that is going to change the world. And so like they're capitalizing on the fact that people are going to be exchanging currencies. You know, and if you believe in hyper Bitcoinization, then you also recognize that the long-term value proposition of Coinbase is zero. Because you know, once you move to the Bitcoin network, why would you ever go back? Or yep, to some
I totally
other
agree.
That system. So, like, I mean, but at the same time that it's doing that, it's taking away some of the investors that just do not understand this technology. And they will, they're much more comfortable buying a stonk than they are, like, buying the base asset. And they're missing the fact that there's tremendous upside in actually owning the base asset. And instead, they're focusing on like this equity. And so my hope is that all of the volatility in Bitcoin, for the people that really don't understand this technology, are going to buy Coinbase instead of Bitcoin. And then we'll be able to enjoy an ongoing pump for Bitcoin, because the people that are buying it understand the technology and they will be long-term hodlers, which is, you know, what I expect of people that understand what this is and what this means for the world.
It's going up forever, just forever.
Forever.
And Laura.
Man. Bullish on Bitcoin, guys. Don't go buy a stonk. Just buy Bitcoin. It's like Tufik was saying earlier. It's like Bitcoin makes saving sexy. You don't complicate your life. Just provide value. Buy the Bitcoins. Go live your life. It's literally that
buy
simple.
Buy Bitcoin. Do nothing. Have fun.
Drink margarita.
Mike, but my question is, can you SPAC your stonks with an NFT?
Can't.
Get out.
Let's go. Wanicus, I love it.
I'm not fucking around today.
Wanicus came in hot.
This is 60k Wynikus.
Uh-oh, you better watch out, man.
Yeah, clear the way.
Make way for the bad guy. Oh, man. All right, anyone want to chime in? People? Nope. Jim? Nope.
I'm good.
All right. We do have some newbie questions. I kind of missed over it. If they're listening for this long, then more power to you. We usually try to get the newer questions earlier in the show, but we did get a discussion in our Discord on mining with GPUs and the likes, and the question that came up was, what is a mining pool? Pretty simple one. Does anyone want to give one or should I just go and ramble on it? Yes, no. All right. I forget who this was. Jessifer, do you remember? Oh, his headphones are off. I forget who it was that asked. But essentially, a mining pool is a way for someone that doesn't have a lot of hash power. You may have a few miners at home, and so you can connect your miners to a pool, and you can basically smooth out your profit. So if you were just a single miner at home and you turned on your Bitcoin mining machines, your ASICs and the likes, you may be spending a lot of electricity before you got a block, and so or a block reward. And so what a lot of people do is they connect into a mining pool, and depending on how much hash power you're giving to the mining pool, then you'll get some rewards from the blocks if your mining pool gets a block reward. And I know a lot of people, I wish Nico was in here because he's our in-house miner usually, and he could maybe tell you a little better of how the process works. But essentially, you're just pooling together your hash power with other miners that might not be as competitive alone, but together you're able to pool a lot of hash power and therefore able to receive block rewards. And it's a way for smaller miners to, and even big miners, to continuously get payouts in Bitcoin. Anyone else want to chime in a few things maybe that I missed, or was that good enough? Seems to be good enough. Jessifer, where did we get this question from? The question is, what does Bitcoin scaling mean to you? Is this one that we've missed, overlooked a few times, or?
It was. I'm trying to remember. Ah, yeah, it came up in one of the Lightning chats, because... Yeah, they were just trying to figure out how much transaction volume is actually happening on the Lightning Network. And the Lightning Network is, you know, largely private, so you can't really figure out how many transactions per second are actually happening. And so there's different ways to scale Bitcoin. And lots of the focus is on, you know, transactions per second. But I feel like there's a whole lot of other ways that that Bitcoin could scale. So I'm really curious what other people think. You know what does Bitcoin scaling actually mean?
Well, I'll jump in a little bit. This perspective might not be the purest Bitcoin perspective, but it seems to be that some quote unquote scaling is going to happen on like custodial upper levels, like what's happening with Cash App and you know, Coinbase. It's like, you know, they're able to move coins around in their database, and it doesn't have an effect on the base chain. But I'm more, you know, aligned with, I guess, Jessifer, because we both like to tinker with Lightning. I'm not like Jessifer. He's more of the specialist when it comes to Lightning. But I like Andrew said, you know, the base layer seems to be like the TCP/IP, and we'll build layers up on top of it, and who knows if there's going to be, you know, like a layer 4 solution on top of Lightning and like RGB and all this stuff. So I think we've yet to see what Bitcoin scaling will look like into the future. But at the present moment, it seems like Bitcoin is scaling pretty well. We're doing pretty well with the block space. The fees aren't too high. I know that, you know, this last week since the last episode, Bitcoin has surpassed the fiat market cap of the British pound, and it's bigger than Visa and MasterCard combined. So it seems to be doing well. I mean, I'm not too concerned about it. We'll see what happens when we get a lot of you know, demand coming in. If we get some crazy eternal September demand coming up, then I guess we'll see if all these upgrades have made everything work out and be a lot smoother. But it's definitely going to be like base chain will be final settlement. I think we can all agree on that, that layer one will be moving enormous amounts of value, and the plebs will just move up above on layers, and we'll figure out what's the best way to interact with, you know, our friends and family or the grocery store and buy your coffee and all that good stuff. But in the meantime, you know, just stack sats and take it to cold storage. But I don't know, Jessifer, you're the Lightning guy. What's your view on it? Because you're like on the front lines, my opinion.
Oh, I'm deep in Lightning. but I really like Andrew's take, you know, kind of just like as the base layer. You've got something that is, you know, verifiable and reliable. And those those two qualities, you know, make it just like this fertile ground to grow the protocol. I mean, on all the different layers. Like the whole idea with Lightning is that it ends up settling onto the base chain. And so you get to just kind of make investments in your future transactions that might occur by opening channels on the Lightning network. So I'll pay for a transaction now because I know that since Bitcoin is so reliable, like it will be there when people need it, and that will make it attractive to actually transact on Bitcoin. But it might be a little bit too expensive because of its verifiability. So that makes a second layer solution like the Lightning Network, you know, a really attractive option, so that, you know, you can pay for your transactions in the future while the transactions are still cheap, and the block space is less competitive.
Jessifer, I had a question for you. Have you used Liquid, or have you looked into Liquid, or are you just Lightning, strictly Lightning?
I think Liquid actually has a use case, but mainly it's just to like retain custody. But I mean, you're kind of trading off. It's like, would I rather pay a transaction fee on the Bitcoin network and trust no one, or would I rather you know, pay a lower fee on Liquid and trust a federated chain where, you know, there's like 14 entities that are all playing into this protocol. So like it plays a role in some like arbitrage moves that I might try to do on Lightning, but I really don't rely on it so much, because I don't really trust it as much as I trust Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think I'm aligned with your perspective on that one.
What about using Liquid to sort of like a coin join where you can, you know, move Bitcoin into Liquid and then take it back out of the Liquid network? It would be a new UTXO, and then, you know, poof, it's magic, all gone.
Yeah, and I mean, I've thought about that, Jim, and that, I mean, personally, maybe that's something I might use. You know, it's got what, confidential transaction or ring signatures in it. So.
Right. Yeah. So that, right. And there's risk. It's a trusted third party of a group of people or a group of entities that are confirming blocks. They're very fast blocks. So far, the network, to my knowledge, has worked. So there's no reason to say, oh, you know, it's been hacked and you can't trust it or anything. But sure, there's definitely more of a risk than Bitcoin main chain. But I think for that usage alone, I've never tried either, so I don't know how easy or hard it is. I don't believe it's all that hard once you are a little more technically savvy. Somebody like Jessifer could probably do it easily. And so I do see some value to using it, again, as long as they stay solvent and trustable and you know, if you're doing something that takes a few minutes to move in and out, is the risk really severe? You know, because the time length is so short, maybe not. So hard to say. Certainly, I don't hear it getting trashed by the community like as a shit coin. It's out in the open, known what it does. The parties that are the validators of the chain are all fairly upstanding Bitcoin citizens, so to speak, as far as my understanding. I don't know everybody involved, but so maybe I'm not being totally accurate there. So anybody that wants to chime in that knows more than me, feel free. But I haven't heard anything really super negative about the liquid sidechain network at all. So.
Yeah, me neither. But you kind of got me thinking, you know, CoinJoin into Liquid and then Liquid out to, I don't know, another wallet. And I mean,
Exactly.
like you can just set up a Blockstream wallet and open up a Liquid wallet in there. So I don't
Yeah,
know.
right? Isn't that right? A Blockstream Green, actually,
Yeah.
is, if I'm not mistaken, because I do have a wa green wallet and I have the blue wallet both on my phone. So, yeah, as a matter of fact, I bet you could swap in and out right in the wallet. I haven't even tried, but I should even consider that. I wonder what that would do for me. I should talk to some people. See, this is why you go to the conference, like in Miami. I'll walk up to somebody that knows, you know, that really knows the technical answer to that stuff, and then figure out, make sure I'm taking precautions with my UTXOs, you know?
Agreed.
I got a little different perspective on scaling.
Shoot it.
Because we're talking about like layer one, two, whatever. But what about scaling in terms of educating normie morons to actually adopt the Bitcoin mindset, like an educational type scaling, actually turn people into Bitcoiners, actually have people run nodes, et cetera, et cetera. Like, how do we scale that?
There's this thing called Bitcoin kindergarten where they teach people
Yo, can we get
that are
all
trying to
7 billion
learn.
people on the
They're
world on here?
allowed to come.
No, I think
I don't
in
know.
class,
The app might not handle
we
it,
need
but
Discord layer two.
I think in here, if I saw correctly, it's like a couple hundred that we can get in here. But you know, they could watch it on YouTube in their podcast. But to your point, Winikus, I think it's kind of like a brain contagion, you know, like what happened to us, you know, or personally what happened to me. You know, I started listening to Marty Bent and Matt O'Dell and Pierre Richard and Bitstein and Stefan Levera. And then after time, you know, we kind of got pushed into this show. And so there's, you know, like one outer bubble from the inner bubble, and then we just kind of, you know, like as more people come on the network or as more people become Bitcoiners and they learn the, you know, the Bitcoin ethos, they get orange pilled, then they start telling their friends, and it's kind of like a game of telephone. Other people tell more people, and until everyone is, well, it won't be everyone, but the majority of people become Bitcoiners. Did you see, I forget who put the tweet, but they were posting a video of like metronomes syncing with each other. And I had this idea for a while. Like I knew that concept, but I could never find the video for that. And I've always had that idea of like, okay, this is how Bitcoin is spread out amongst the population as a whole is, you know, some people start vibrating, you know, their frequency starts aligning with the Bitcoin network, and then as their frequency gets stronger and they get more conviction, then that starts spreading out with their friends. And I forget who said it, or actually it was John Vallis who said it. He went something on the lines of, you know, like the way we will spread Bitcoin is by people seeing Bitcoiners and seeing that their lives are maybe better than theirs, or they're living a good life. And you know, they ask themselves like, oh wow, this person's a good person. Like, I wonder what it is that made them who they are today. And you just tell them, you know, like, oh, I'm a Bitcoiner. And in the conversation, I think we were also talking about psychedelics and stuff, and it's like, oh yeah, you know, like these are some of the stepping stones that got me to here. And it just, you know, like humans want to improve their lives and they want to live a better life. And as Bitcoiners, we kind of are the individual example, kind of what we were saying with Tufik in the beginning of the show of, you know, like what responsibility do we have to the ecosystem? And it's like, you just kind of have to be a like a lighthouse, a beacon of hope, or a beacon and an example of what Bitcoin can do for people. And you just try to live it, you know, as much as we spread the gospel, we just kind of have to embody what Bitcoin is and what Bitcoin does and slowly change the culture.
Phew. If Bitcoin isn't a religion, I don't know what is.
Well, I mean, I definitely joke and say that it's a religion, but...
Oh, it's a full-on religion.
But is it, though? It's like, it's more of a culture, in my opinion, you know? Like, society at large kind of has a shitty culture right now. Like, a fiat culture, you know, whether it's social media, like Instagram or TikTok or Snapchat, and, you know, like, the first... Our first... involvement with the YouTubes and the Twitters and those likes, you know, our first interaction with social media, this is like the first iteration of what social media can do, and we're living that now. But now, as like Bitcoiners, you know, or the first level of the internet and how it affects culture, like we text, we barely put words together. It's like Idiocracy, you know, like everyone's gonna sound like a Valley Girl and, you know, be have like really bad like a real dumbed down language and basically how Idiocracy is now a documentary. But like now, as Bitcoin, as the killer app of the internet, it's almost like it's able to proliferate the human consciousness and our ability by connecting everyone on one money, on a sound monetary system that incentivizes you to act for your best interest and, you know, provide value to the world versus just leeching off value. It starts to not mess with your psyche, but it starts to change your, you know, like your view on the world. Like Bitcoin changes you. You don't change Bitcoin. So as much as I do believe half jokingly that Bitcoin is a religion, I also think it's like an amplifier of culture, and our culture to move up, it doesn't have too far of a, like, it's not too high of a bar to improve our culture. And so as much as we're like, you know, separate money from state, I think we kind of already have been, for the most part, like humans separated from religion, even though a lot of Bitcoiners are religious. And it does kind of bring you back to the idea of like, you know, there has to be a God, there has to be order into this universe, because there's certain principles in the universe that you discover and that are, you know, like mathematics, like there's just things in this universe that are there, and as humans we discover this. So I don't know, I'm still on the fence whether Bitcoin is religion, but I kind of feel like the orange pill is, you know, it's like the psychedelic to culture, and
great awakening.
Yeah, you know, like the second renaissance.
It's in alignment with first principles. That is, us humans, because of the tool called money, figured out how to prosper by having a collective agreement. You know, because of our nature, because of our selfish nature, and wanting to hoard things that are scarce, and wanting to value things that are scarce, we came to realize that sort of built-in nature creates the ability for everybody to collectively understand that we can agree on something called money. And it's taken a lot of different forms, but money is a natural progression for the way humans need to survive, or at least how we evolved to survive. And it's allowed us to prosper. So it's a natural alignment. When the money gets better, you feel better, your life improves, everything around you improves. It's like a natural alignment. It's almost like, you know, getting in alignment with gravity, something that you can't choose, you know, that's just out there acting on you. You know, the money systems of the world, the way people interact with money, it's not like you get to control that. You get to choose. So you could go use Mexican pesos for your money, and in some places in the world, that's perfectly fine. But as we choose to change and use this other money, and more people adopt it, that those people are going to find that you know, things will more better align for them, and their lives will improve. And you know, it's because you're no longer losing your, you know, the whole purpose of money is to store value, and by putting it into Bitcoin instead of a different storage vehicle, it's not leaking away its energy. So you have this natural alignment to want to do that. That lowers your time preference. It does all these other things. So it just aligns your whole life, like, in really good ways.
I think Bitcoiners in general, like most of the people that are all in, we share like the same values pretty much, and really preach like low time preference and things like that, more traditional things. And at the end of the day, humans are successful because we can organize groups in an orderly fashion, and usually religion is one of those methods of doing so, and money is another. Like, we create systems to have order amongst large populations of people, and the Bitcoin like community or religion, let's just say, everyone basically is organized behind a belief system at the end of the day. So oh, it's really interesting stuff. There's some deep shit that you can get into.
I love that take, Jim. Just like the idea that the money is natural, and like the and also scarcity is natural to the world. I mean, like, yeah, you're gonna like shape something out of bone. Well, like, something had to live in the first place, you know, in order to create that bone. And so that was the proof of work right there. And then, and because energy is scarce in the world, like, then we have scarcity in creating goods. I think like scarcity is the natural piece. This like unlimited money printing is the most unnatural concept to us. And so, like, if you want to call, you know, our rational behavior when dealing with natural scarcity, like a religion, then actually, like, maybe this is the exit of religion, and this is just rational thought taking over. The fact that, you know, like, now I can make a little bit more sense of the world, and there is a whole like idea and view set to go along with that, but it's far more natural than unlimited fiat money printing.
The scarcity part is the natural part for sure. And then you factor in our human nature that reacts to the scarcity. And so on average, humans deal with or react to scarcity in a similar way. We tend to value things that are scarce, especially if we believe that they'll hold some value for us, so we can use that to our benefit. So scarcity functions directly with our human nature. It's like, I think about cats. They can live in a safe environment their whole life, but they hear a noise they never heard before, and they freak out. You know, they're skittish. They're just the nature to be like always on edge. They walk along the edges of the walls. Almost like a safety mechanism. It's bred into them. They can't not do it. And humans have certain normal fundamental natures as well. And the ability to perceive and work with and understand money and then use it for our benefit has been one of the things, if not the most important thing, that's allowed humans to prosper for thousands of years and have all the value we have on this planet, because we've been able to specialize, you know, division of labor, So now you can do one thing, get really good at it, and then trade that for an intermediary good called money, and then get anything else you want as long as you have enough of that money. So however many hours you could put in, whatever kind of value you can trade and get a bunch of big piles of money. Some people get bigger piles than other, and then you have more different things. But this is a concept that we figured out thousands of years ago. And, you know, the form of money does dictate how it plays out. And now, you know, the fiat money system has been screwing people for years. A handful of people control it, and it totally screws with everybody else and steals their value. And now Bitcoin reverses that. It's now a level playing field. Anybody can own it. No one can stop you. You know, somebody would say maybe it's not level because some people got it sooner and own lots of it. But in reality, nobody, no matter how much you own, you can't affect the way it works. So in that regard, it's a level playing field. And some of those people, all those people that own those large amounts, over a long enough period of time, that will disperse out into all of society because they'll die. Somebody else will take over it. They'll get lavish and spend it. And then it's out there. And, you know, once it's out there, it may not come back to that person, but it just starts moving around. So all Bitcoin will get distributed. It'll get fairer. The whole world will get better. La-di-da-di-da. It's going to be awesome.
Bullish.
That's it.
Bullish. Let's go.
Go.
Well, guys, we've definitely gone over our hour mark today, but we have two more questions. I'll leave one for next week. But
let's keep it going.
We're gonna keep it going one more because tonight's episode has been pretty philosophical, if I do say so myself. And so we have one question here: is what are some other rabbit holes that Bitcoin brings you down? And that, you know, like, what are the other rabbit holes that you've fallen into as a Bitcoiner? So, like, me personally, like, one of them is, like, working out and eating better. I know, Jim, we tried to get you last week to talk about the carnivore diet. And, you know, so I know that that's one thing that you went down. And I came to Bitcoin as, like, a philosopher, so I was very excited that there was philosophy related concept with Bitcoin. That's probably one of the reasons why I was so hooked. And then it's also funny that so many Bitcoiners are into psychedelics. It's kind of mind-blowing, to be honest. But you know, like, computer science, I guess, is another rabbit hole. But what are some rabbit holes that you guys have gone down, or that you think other people should maybe go down? Oh, I guess there's also guns. Bitcoiners are really into guns.
I think the natural progression is towards libertarianism and sovereign individual lifestyle. Then you realize, okay, if that's what I believe, then I have to be responsible for myself. And then you start paying attention to more things and you become more responsible. So your health does improve. You touched on carnivore diet, which I did adopt, and it did help me get healthy. So I do have to credit Bitcoin and my change of perspective, my new paradigms that helped. And anything else, you said guns, same kind of thing. You want to be self-sovereign. You also realize you got to be able to protect yourself. So you start to believe in those natural rights to protect yourself. And why should some other group of people say, well, you're not allowed to own a gun, or only we are, we being the state, you know? So, like, yeah, you do change in other ways when you start to see how money's broken and how there's this great new money that helps fix things, and then it spills into other parts of your life. I think that's a fairly ubiquitous story for a lot of Bitcoiners. At least I've heard all you guys, most of you guys talk about it. Everybody seems to. Wouldn't you agree?
I would definitely agree.
Yeah, I think Jim nailed it with talking about self-responsibility, and there's a lot of things that you can take up on that with the whole, like, gun ownership, growing your own food, being in shape, taking care of your health, you know, so those are, like, all tied to responsibility. And then I think also it's exploring, like, creativity. Hopefully you reach a level of, like, wealth in Bitcoin where you don't have to, like, slave for fiat, then you can also focus on creativity and finding, like, passions and things like that.
wisdom. You know, one
bullish.
Bullish. One thing, just for, I'll let you go. But one thing it's kind of like, I'm probably going to get stoned for this one. But one thing that, like, I'm thinking of this, one thing that has changed for me is, I know Bitcoiners sell all assets and we don't buy things. But one thing that I've noticed and is a slight change in me is that I like buy better clothes now, not to like look better, but just better quality clothes. So I don't have to keep buying the same stuff over and over. You buy something of quality, it lasts you for years, and you know, like, you look good, you feel good, all that good stuff. So I, you know, like, Bitcoin really does affect like every aspect. But just for go in so I can hide my shame.
No, I think the rabbit hole that Bitcoin has really pushed me down is one that I didn't quite expect. I mean, I think at first glance, I was thinking, you know, it's pushed me down like this kind of technology rabbit hole that I've like now can like use command line and like maybe I focus more on privacy and how much, you know, my data means to me. But then after a while, I think the real rabbit hole that Bitcoin pushes you down is a rabbit hole of hope. Is that, you know, here is a system that you can actually affect change and positive change for the world. And that, you know, people acting, you know, for like, yeah, if you want to make a positive difference for the world, like, donate to a Bitcoin Core contributor. Like, that's like, you know, you're wondering what to do with your stimulus money. Like, donate it to Bitcoin Core. Like that's actually what is going to, you know, make a difference for the world. And like with the hope that Bitcoin gives me, the fact that like I can operate in a fair, an honest system. Like, I get this like incredible sense of agency that like, yes, I can like travel all over the world. My money will still be good. Like, I can learn any skill that I could use to contribute to Bitcoin or to contribute to myself. And then this whole sovereignty rabbit hole is that like, because you're able to verify everything yourself, like, yes, like I can separate myself from anyone else, like having to check things for me. That like I can do that, and I don't need to trust anyone else to be able to do those verifications, and to be self-sovereign. So I think that's the big one for me. It's just hope.
Bitcoin is hope. Also, you just for
wisdom,
as always, just for put my whole stimmy in Bitcoin, dog.
Just buy Bitcoin, actually. You don't have to donate it. You can just buy Bitcoin. And
I'm down the stimmy rabbit hole.
Down the stimmy rabbit hole. Just for, you're so kind. You just give away sats, dude. Kindest guy in the chat.
I'm gonna be developing for Bitcoin Core.
You are. Yo, give me your stimmy.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Everyone, quick. Donate to one.
Everyone's a
I'll
scammer.
Take care of your sats, guys.
Everyone's a scammer, B.
True.
Alright, guys. Anyone wanna chime in? I think we'll wrap it up here. Oh, shoot it,
just
Tommy.
Wanted to add real quick. Yeah, Thomas, definitely hope. BTC brings us hope. And I was also thinking that it brings kind of a global mindset. So every day I walk around, I spend my dirty fiat if I have any left. So I act locally, but I think globally, because my net worth, even more, it's like all in Bitcoin. And it's just that, yeah. It brought me down the rabbit hole of global thinking. One Earth. Peace.
I think that's like another rabbit hole, you know, like the idea of localism, and Bitcoins are very much into that idea of, you know, building your own citadels. And so there's so many rabbit holes that are led from being orange pilled. So I'm sure there'll be more that pop up that we just, you know, we haven't thought of, you know, like Brandon Quidham when he came in, you know, like the fun guy in Bitcoin. And there's just that it all, it's like, what's that saying? Like all roads lead to Rome. It's like all roads lead back to Bitcoin. So I guess, you know, fix the money, fix the world, and everything else will figure itself out. All right, guys, I'm gonna wrap this up. Usually I have Nick wrap it up. Jestifer, you got some last words for the viewers and for the classroom?
Absolute fire episode. Thanks to everyone that came out. Yeah, you guys really make this show. And keep coming out every Wednesday.
Yeah, we love you guys. All right, peace out.
Don't buy Coinbase.
Delete Coinbase.
Over.
Over. Don't buy Coinbase.
Oh, yeah.
Never go up.
Oh, yeah.
Bullish. Wisdom. Gang.
Gang, gang. All right, guys.
Citadel 21.
I almost forgot it. Like, I almost forget every week. I think we were all super bullish last week, and we pretty much all said over the meme number of 69,420. We definitely got all-time highs this week, but we are still at 63K. So I'm guessing one last week. So next week, over under 69,420. I'm going to say over. Let me check the chat over here.
See if it's anyone... totally doable. I might have to go with you on this one.
Let's go.
Let's go. Steam.
Yeah,
it's taking a loan out.
Hey, yo, you brought up the Stimmy check the other. You know, I look back at when I put mine in. You know, I turned it into Sats. It's up 13.5% in a few weeks.
The last one, right?
Yeah, take that and that's the one I put in last year is up like 10x or something.
Oh yeah, that one's to the moon. But the
take
recent
that,
one,
government.
Yeah, the recent one's up plenty. I think that the price was around 55k when I turned it from cuck bucks into sats.
Yeah.
So 55K, we're at 63 right now. So that's a pretty good increase. I think I figured the math right. It's about 13.5%. So how do you get 13.5% even in a year, let alone in like a couple weeks, maybe a month, whatever it was. Yeah, it was about a month ago.
You buy Bitcoin.
Buy Bitcoin, everybody.
Dang. All right, guys. Well, everyone said over. Hey. Except for CB. He says 65K. So he's not even in the
Don't
chat.
Don't come back. Don't come yeah, back. CB, you're there.
Can it be even any more boring with that prediction?
Get out. Oh, man. That was good. All right, guys. Dead. All right. Thanks for coming out, guys. We're going to wrap this episode up. We'll see you next Wednesday. Peace out.
Later.
Bye.